Hey everybody, I'm Stuart. Let's get to it. Some of us have probably stood at a crosswalk before and pressed this button. Now, the reason why you press this button, obviously, is so that you don't have to play human Frogger trying to cross the street. You press this button so that the don't walk sign changes to walk, and obviously you can walk across the street safely. If you've never done this, then perhaps you've done this. You've gotten into an elevator, you've pressed the floor that you want to go to, and then down here at the bottom, if you look closely, there is a closed door button. And in an age of social distancing, I don't know if you've experienced this in an elevator lately, but you certainly press that button hoping the doors will close so that nobody else gets on the elevator. We do that because we think we're in control. But here's what's interesting. Whether it's a crosswalk button or an elevator button that you press to close the doors, those buttons don't actually do anything. In fact, they've placed those buttons there for you to feel like you're in control. If we get really, really honest, most of us spend our lives like a little kid in a grocery cart with a steering wheel. If you've ever seen a child being pushed by their parents in a grocery store, generally speaking, they're always steering toward the toy or the cereal aisle. That child literally thinks he's in the Talladega 500 in a grocery store and he has control, when in reality, there's someone that's in control behind him, because we all think that we need control. In fact, if we're honest, most of us spend our lives, most of us align our lives, most of us spend the majority of our time trying to have control, trying to gain clarity, trying to get security. What we want, if we're really honest, is certainty. I love what Mark Nepo says. Mark Nepo says that we are the only creatures that seek out guarantees. And in so doing, we snuff out the spark that is discovery. Think about that. As humans, we so badly want guarantees. We so badly want control. We want security. We want clarity. We want certainty, that it snuffs out this beautiful thing in all of us called discovery. And here's what happens slowly but surely. We begin to place premium value on certainty, on those things that we think we're in control of. And here's what I just want to say to you today. At some point, that certainty is going to be rocked. One thing is for certain, and that is uncertainty. And what makes faith fall apart isn't doubt. I think what makes faith fall apart is being too certain of the wrong things. I read this book a couple of years ago by a guy named Andy Crouch. The book is called Strong and Weak, and he talks about the fact that most of us in life spend the majority of our life thinking that our life is really linear, and we're constantly moving from weakness to strength, that life is about moving from weakness to strength. If I could borrow Andy's idea, in reality, what we're trying to do is to move from uncertainty to certainty. And we think that life is like this. We think that life is linear. Miley Cyrus would propose that life is a climb, that it moves from uncertainty to certainty, and it is an uphill journey. But here's how that begins to really take shape with all of us specifically. Think about it this way, that when we are born, what we tend to think is that this is the way that life is going to be. You're born, and if you're a parent, you know this. You cannot wait for the day that your children can dress themselves, they can feed themselves, they can go to the bathroom by themselves because you get your life back. Then we're going to send them to pre-K, and then we're going to send them to elementary school, and then we're going to send them to junior high school. And let's be honest, adults, in fairness, none of us will want to go back to junior high school because it's the toughest time. If you are in middle school and watching this, it's just a difficult time. We love you. You are a champion. But we think this is the way that life is going to be. It's going to move linear. And yes, sometimes it's uphill, but this is the way that life is. But here's reality. Reality is that it is like this. In fact, it's a crisis when you're born. But we move through life, and there are ups and there are downs, and trying to potty train, and then sending them to school, and then to elementary school and to junior high. And it doesn't stop there. We think when they get to high school, it'll level out, and then they're going to go to college, and then they're going to get a job, and then they're going to get married, and then they're going to have kids, and everything is going to level out. What the reality is, all of that has all of this in it. There are ups and there are downs. And even some of us right now as adults, you now have adult kids, and you think you're through all of that, because here's what happens when you have adult kids. As you're parenting adult kids, those adult kids are eventually going to get a job, and then there are going to be some weddings, and then you're going to have some grandkids, and then you're going to die. And we think this is when it's going to level out. And here's the harsh reality. It's up and down, up and down, up and down. And do you notice in the realm of the medical community, a flat line means death. And this means life. And here's what I would say to you today. Life is not the way that it's supposed to be. Life, ladies and gentlemen, is the way that it is. And we think that our job as humans is to avoid pain. We think our job as parents is to protect our children from pain and uncertainty. We think our job as friends is to fix our friends' pain and uncertainty. And we can't. And then we wonder why we feel like failures. And in the middle of all this, and I know you're wondering, are you going to talk about Jesus or the Bible? In the middle of what you and I call life, this man, Jesus, thousands of years ago, makes this statement that we all hang on. In the middle of what we know to be so much uncertainty, so much lack of control, what seems to be an insecure time, where there seems to be no clarity, Jesus says that I have come that they may have life, and they may have life to the full. Jesus, in the middle of all this, goes, I've really come here so that you can have life in the middle of chaos and insecurity and a lack of control and uncertainty. I have come that you may have life and life to the full. And we love, especially if you've had an extended relationship with a faith community, we love this verse. We hang on every word that Jesus says here because, right, all of us want life to the fullest. Who wants a life that is subpar or average? We all want that, but part of what I would love to do today, if I could, is to help us understand, why did Jesus say this? Because this statement alone, we all like. But we miss the fact that the first part of John chapter 10, verse 10, is this. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I didn't grow up in church. My faith journey is an interesting one. But if you did grow up in church, or you've been walking with Jesus for an extended period of time, or you have sat under some sort of teaching, some of us have heard this taught, and you thought that the thief that Jesus is referencing is
the devil.
Okay, you think it's Satan. You think it's that enemy. But here's why Jesus says this. You have to look at the chapter before John chapter 10 to understand what Jesus is talking about. And here's what he's talking about. In John chapter 9, Jesus and those that followed him closely are making their way. They're walking along, and they come upon this man who was born blind. Now, if you know anything about first century Judaism, you know that, and we're going to even talk about this a little bit next week, you know that the Jews thought that anyone that had some sort of disease or affliction was in sin. Either this person sinned or their parents had sinned. So as Jesus is walking along, they come upon this blind beggar, and those following him closest ask him, and also remember, there were always crowds around Jesus, and those crowds were an incredibly diverse group of people. They asked Jesus about this blind beggar, Rabbi, teacher, who sinned, this man or his parents? And Jesus looks at them and says, you're asking the wrong question. Neither of that is true. This man has this affliction so that the Son of God or God can show off through him. And here's what Jesus does. It's a very interesting thing. He spits into the ground. He creates some mud with his saliva. He takes the mud, puts it on the blind beggar's eyes, and tells him to go to the Pool of Siloam and wash off. And when this blind beggar goes to the Pool of Siloam and washes off, now he can see. And as he is now celebrating the fact that he can see, he runs back to his neighborhood. He goes back to the hood. He goes to the neighborhood. And his friends are going, hold on a second. Isn't this the blind beggar that we've known all our life? So much was their discrepancy in what they were watching with this man being able to see that even some of his neighbors were saying, that's not the blind beggar that I know. He just looks like him. And it gets so chaotic that they take this man, who the man born blind, to the Pharisees, the people who had a PhD in religious law, and they say, tell them your story. To the Pharisees, tell them your story. And he tells them that this man named Jesus healed him by spitting into the ground, making some mud, putting it on their eyes. He washed it off. Now I can see. And they lose their minds for two reasons, basically. Number one, Jesus had healed this man on the Sabbath. And the Pharisees were so controlled by certainty that they were certain that couldn't happen because you're not supposed to heal on the Sabbath or do anything on the Sabbath. The scriptures tell us, John chapter 9 tells us, that the Pharisees are even split in their understanding of what had happened, because there's this one division who thinks he's been healed on the Sabbath, so that's not true. And then another division thinks only God can heal people. Sinful people can't heal people, but this guy can obviously see. So there's this discrepancy. So much so that they press the guy a little bit more and they ask him, who do you think this Jesus is that healed you? And he says, I think he's a prophet. And then they are so convinced of their certainty that they go, this is a trick. You really weren't born blind. So what we need you to do is go get your parents and bring them to us. They go get his parents. They bring the parents come to the Pharisees, and the Pharisees ask him three questions. Is this your son? Was he born blind? And how was he healed? And the parents go, yes, he's our son. Yes, he's born blind. But he's old enough to tell you how he was healed, because they didn't want to get kicked out of the synagogue. And so they look at the blind man again and they say, tell us again how you were healed. And this is actually kind of comical, because the guy born blind looks at them and goes, do y'all really like this story? Are you really down with what I'm talking about? Do you guys want to become disciples of this Jesus? And it infuriates the Pharisees, because in their mind, their certainty was everything. And they send him out of the synagogue, and Jesus gets word. Jesus has kind of wandered off. He gets word that this man has been cast out of the synagogue, and he goes and finds him. Now, keep this in mind. This man, when he washed the water off, Jesus wasn't at the Pool of Siloam, so he hasn't seen Jesus. So Jesus walks up to him, and he says, do you want to know this Son of Man? This Son of God talking about himself? And the blind guy goes, yes. The man born blind goes, yes, I want to know him. If I could just know what he looked like. And Jesus kind of, in my mind, Jesus kind of whispers to him and goes, bro, you're looking at him. And the scriptures tell us, there's this varying opinion, but the scriptures tell us that this man born blind literally begins to worship Jesus. And Jesus tells him, here's why I've come. What I've come to do is to show people who think they're so certain that they're actually blind. And I'm also come to touch people who cannot see and give them sight. And there were Pharisees that were close enough to hear what Jesus said. Because in essence, here's what he was saying to them. You think you're in control. You think you have all the certainty in the world. But you're really blind. In fact, the Pharisees said to them, are you calling us blind? And Stuart Hall paraphrased, this is what he says in reply. If the shoe fits, wear it. And I think it's because they probably were close to a sheepfold holding sheep, Jesus starts talking about a sheepfold and shepherds and gates. And here's what he says. What he says to these Pharisees and everyone listening, what he says to them is this, that only a thief would jump over the fence in the sheepfold and begin to cause chaos in the sheep. But a good shepherd would enter through the gate and the sheep would know his voice and they would follow him. And Jesus makes this announcement to the Pharisees. He says, I am the good shepherd. And not only am I the good shepherd, I am the gate. And he says, you Pharisees who think you're in control, you Pharisees are the thieves. And all you come to do is steal, kill, and destroy life. Because here's what we think. What we think is we've got to move from uncertainty to certainty. And I think this is what Jesus was saying, that life is not linear. Life is more like a quadrant. And the quadrant that Jesus was talking about is this place where you are confident and secure and know that there's a God, but there is some uncertainty in your life. And let's just be straight up. We are all living in that time. And Jesus implies that this quadrant is where fullness is found. When you are confident in Him, but all hell is breaking loose in your life. And consider who it was that was listening to him when he talked about, I've come to give you life and life to the full. When he said to the Pharisees, you are the religious, you're the thieves, you're robbers. You've come to steal, kill, and destroy. You're offering certainty and you can't offer that. There were people listening to him, especially women, and especially the diseased. In fact, the blind man would have been one of these, who were constantly in the suffering quadrant. They constantly were in suffering. And there was all this uncertainty and no certainty at all. And then there were these people over here that had withdrawn. There was a little bit of certainty and a little bit of uncertainty. And they just kind of were, bleh. In my opinion, this is where those who wound up following Jesus closest, the disciples, lived. In our time, the suffering in our culture would be African Americans for hundreds and hundreds of years who suffered during systemic oppression. Over here in the withdrawn section, I like to, my life's work has been with teenagers. In this section, it's the kid who plays Call of Duty, protecting our country in a beanbag, but they would never join the military. It's the teenager who is constantly texting that girl that he thinks is just incredible, but he would never actually talk to that girl. Or it's the one who plays, you know, NFL Madden, but would never try out for the football team. There's a little bit of certainty, but there's also a little bit of uncertainty. And then there are those who live in constant certainty and no uncertainty. And isn't it interesting when you live in this quadrant, who you become? These were the Pharisees. And all they did was abuse their power. They were constantly flexing on people. We are certain we're in control. There is no way that a sinner can heal someone. And he certainly can't heal them on the Sabbath. And Jesus goes, no, 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 watch this. This is where fullness is found. Complete confidence in your Creator. Also understanding that there's all this uncertainty in life because life isn't as it's supposed to be. Life is what it is. And what begins to happen in my mind when we decide that I am going to embrace uncertainty, because there is one thing that is for certain, uncertainty. When we start, watch this, trusting. When we start trusting, because if all you do is live in uncertainty, you hurt. And if there's only just a little bit of certainty and a little bit of uncertainty, you become apathetic. And if you're completely convinced, everybody knows someone like this, right? They are that person that is constantly telling you, this is what's right. This is what's true. This is not ever going to change. This is the deal. I think they call those people annoying. You know those people? They're constantly judging. And Jesus goes, you really want to understand what life to the fullest is? You want to have overall well-being in your life? It's about trust. I am confident that there is a God. I am confident that you are who you claimed and promised to be. But there's so much uncertainty. So I trust. See, I think that life to the fullest does not, cannot exist without uncertainty and trust. I mean, let's be straight up with each other. Can you think about the times in your life when you felt the most alive? For the husbands out there, do you remember the first time you leaned in to kiss your wife and you were completely confident that this is what you wanted to do, but you were also so unsure of how it was going to be received? Or for those of us who are parents and you were in the delivery room, dads, as a father, let me speak directly to the dads. You and your bride are bringing life to the world, and you are so incredibly excited and confident and certain. And in the same breath, you're going, oh my God, we are bringing life into the world. And some of us have been dumb enough to do it multiple times. But it's when you felt the most alive, the most certain, when there's uncertainty. Lauren Winter tells this story in her book, Still, about a friend of hers named Julian, a young woman when she was 12 years old that was about to go through confirmation. And what made Julian's confirmation, if you know anything about the liturgical church, confirmation is this time where you basically, as you're entering into teenage years, you basically confess the tenets of the faith, that these are the things that you're going to believe. What made Julian's confirmation even crazier and more tension-filled is that Julian's pastor was her dad. And Julian has this conversation with her dad. Her dad could tell that Julian was nervous about confirmation. And he asked her, why are you nervous? And she said this. She said, I'm not sure that I can live up to what it is that I say that I believe. And I'm also not sure that I'm always going to believe these things. And her dad's response has made an indelible mark in my life. Because here's what he said to her. He said, what you promise when you are confirmed is not that you will believe this forever. What you promise when you're confirmed is that this is the story that you're going to wrestle with forever, that you're going to have certainty and uncertainty. And that's where fullness of life is found. Jesus explained it this way as he was talking about these thieves who jump over the fence and try to steal, kill, and destroy, who offer this pseudo idea of control. When he's talking about himself in the middle of John 10, verse 3, he says, the gatekeeper, talking about himself, opens the gate and the sheep recognize his voice and come to him. And this is the part that rattled me when I read it. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. He walks ahead of them and they follow him because they know his voice. Here's what Jesus is saying in essence. Believing is not a what word. Believing is a who word. Believing is you trusting in God. And that is where fullness is found. Even the psalmist understood when he said, David writes, happy are those, complete are those, whole are those who trust the Lord, who place their faith and trust in God, who do not turn to idols, who do not make an idol of certainty, who do not place premium value on control, security, clarity, certainty. Happy are those who trust the Lord, who do not turn to idols, or join those who worship false gods, who do not make an idol of certainty. There's a gentleman years ago named John Cavanaugh. John Cavanaugh was a Jesuit priest, an ethicist who taught at St. Louis University. And he got an opportunity to go to Calcutta in India and interact and do life for a period of time with Mother Teresa. And in doing life with Mother Teresa, one of the things that he wanted was to be able to have a conversation with Mother Teresa and to talk to her at some point as they were helping the sick and the dying in the streets in the slums of Calcutta. So he gets this opportunity. And as he gets an opportunity to have this conversation with Mother Teresa, she asked him, or he asked her, I should say, will you pray for me? Now, I don't know if you're this way, but I would think that Mother Teresa praying for you would be an incredible, incredible thing. And John Cavanaugh, in his wisdom, says to Mother Teresa, will you pray for me? And she asked him, what do you want me to pray for? And John Cavanaugh, in the spur of the moment, in that time, he looks at her and he says, Mother Teresa, would you pray that God would give me clarity? Something that Andy, our pastor, has talked about recently. Would you pray that God would give me clarity? And I love the challenge of how Mother Teresa responded, because here's how she responded to John Cavanaugh. She said, I have never had clarity. What I have always had is trust. I have never had certainty. What I've always had is trust. I have never been in control. What I've always had is trust. So I'll pray that you trust God. I'll pray that you trust God. Now, some of you, if you tuned in a couple of weeks ago, you heard my wife and I being interviewed by Andy about my fight with COVID-19. The entire month of April, I spent basically in a medically induced coma. Obviously, God has done an unbelievable miracle in my life that I'm so grateful for. But one of the things that had to happen as a result of all the complications that went on in my body is that my body developed blood clots, especially in my legs. Because the virus attacks the blood and causes extreme clotting, my legs developed these blood clots. And so while I was still in ICU, right before I got out of ICU, an incredible doctor, shout out to Dr. Whitney, Dr. Whitney decided to put this filter in my stomach. Now, here's what this filter does. The filter this is blown up so that you can see it, but it's very, very thin. You can obviously see these prongs that spread out so that if a blood clot gets loose and starts going toward my heart, the filter, because of the prongs, would catch the blood clot. So he puts this in while I'm in ICU in one of the many tubes that I had sticking in my body. He gets it into my stomach. No big deal, because I'm still semi-conscious at that time. Well, 20 plus days later, after I get out of ICU, Dr. Whitney wants to take this out of my stomach. So we go for a checkup where he's going to talk about taking this out of my stomach. And my wife and I both were really uneasy because of how long I stayed in a medically induced coma about going under anesthesia. So we looked at him and we were like, I'm totally cool with you taking it out, but how are you going to take it out? Are you going to have to put me under? And he assured me, Stuart, you're not going to go under. You're going to be awake the whole time. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go through your jugular vein. Yeah, exactly. As soon as he said awake and jugular vein, I literally went, what? Time out. I'm going to be awake and you're going to go through my jugular vein? He goes, yeah, I'm going to go through your jugular vein. And here's what I decided to do. I decided to trust Dr. Whitney. Did I understand everything that he was going to do? No. But I had a choice. I could sit in this non-existent position of control, security, clarity, or I could trust him. And just so you know, here's what, how it went down. They roll me into the surgery room. Zach Brown is blaring, knee deep in. I mean, that's happening, and it's blaring, and they prep me. They put this curtain that's right here. I'm completely awake. Dr. Whitney comes in. I'm getting ready to give you the local. He gives me multiple shots right here in the area of my jugular vein. Felt like if you ever played football, I got a stinger. There's a nurse standing right here. I'm talking to her the whole time. And he tells me, okay, you're going to feel a couple of pricks. And I feel that. And she's talking to me. She had actually been in ICU when I first came in. So she's talking about how proud she is of me and how much better I look, because apparently I looked like I was going to die. And she's been praying for me. And then Dr. Whitney comes around the corner and goes, yeah, next week I'm going to go fishing in Key West. And I look at him and go, aren't you supposed to be on the other side of the curtain taking that filter out? And he goes, I'm done. He had taken this very small rod with a hook on the end of it and hooked it, ran it through my jugular down into my stomach, hooked it on the end of this filter, ran a catheter tube over that rod to make these prongs go in, pulled it out, 10 minutes, and we're done. And the whole time I'm battling. I wish I was in control. I wish I had some security. I wish I had clarity. I wish I had certainty. And all I had was trust. That's all of us listening. And here's the heads up. That's where fullness is found. Confidence that God is who He says He is, and He'll do everything He promised He'll do. In the middle of life that is blaring uncertainty. So who will you trust? Or will you remain in your suffering? Or will you just step back into apathy? Or will you be that person that's constantly being judgmental because you're so sure? Isn't it interesting what happens in our life when we get so sure that something eventually comes along that shakes our certainty? Sometimes it's death. Sometimes it's disease. Maybe it's a son or daughter that comes in and has a conversation with you that rocks you to your core. And Jesus goes, I've come to give you life and life to the fullest. The thief, the robbers are offering you certainty. I am offering you trust. Let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, here's what I ask, that you would give all of us, the wisdom to see those areas in our life. When we look at that quadrant, are we spending our time hurting because there's so much uncertainty and no trust at all, no certainty whatsoever, no confidence in you? Are we just waffling because we've withdrawn, because we're not real sure? There's hurt, but we think you're there. And then for others of us, we have moved to the position of a Pharisee. We are so judgmental. We are constantly flexing. Would you move us all? Would you move us all to fullness? Confidence that you are who you say you are in the middle of so much uncertainty. We trust you. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
That was incredible. Hey, you forgot your grocery cart. That really was amazing. Hey, Stuart has given us a lot to think about. And before you go, I want to give you some questions to help you think about it. And if you're watching today with your family or some friends, I would love for you to tackle at least one of these questions right now, especially this first one if you're watching with family members. And that's this. Have you ever had an experience, probably a big life-altering experience,